I think most Christians have a soft spot for nature, but while they might be sympathetic towards nature, they wouldn't regard it as central to their calling. And this morning, as it's the first season of creation and it's also Father's Day, I thought I'd commence with a dodgy quote from Jesus.
What's he doing there?
Consider the birds of the air, and that's what my granddaughter is doing.
He's on your pram.
Can I fly away?
He might fly away. We've got to keep going. See you later. Not too close, please. All right, let's keep going. Major Mitchell, you might have to hop off now. Thank you.
As endearing as that is, the news for the world's birds is really grim. A recent study said about 48% of the world's birds are in decline. And so for me as a grandfather on this day, I'm really struck by the challenge of will there actually be any Major Mitchell cockatoos when my granddaughter reaches my age? Or will they have faded away due to our neglect? We are world leaders in Australia. We are world leaders in extinctions, unfortunately. We love to be winners, but this is a stake we would rather not be at the top of. We've achieved the greatest number of extinctions of mammals of any country in the world, and we've just chalked up reasonably recently the first mammal to be identified as having become extinct because of climate change and sea level rise. We're part of an extinction event that's the sixth one in recorded history of the planet. The others are clear in the fossil record. This one, though, is unique in its of our own making. This extinction event is taking place at a pace about 100 times faster than any other that has been in recorded history on the planet. So as a Christian, is that something I need to be concerned about? Or how concerned about it do I need to be? What might it take for me to think I need to act differently or contribute in some way towards addressing that? As I was trying to understand what influences people's decisions of whether they will or won't do something in regard to the nature or caring for creation, I came across a paper that I found really helpful by three American women. And it said whether we value nature is usually a combination of three aspects of our lives: our worldview, the culture we live in, and what we regard as reliable source of knowledge about nature. Today I don't have time to unpack all three. I'm going to focus just on that first one, the worldview. What I mean by a worldview is what are our core beliefs and assumptions about relationships we have with other people, other human beings, present and to come, our relationships with the rest of the non-human living part of the world, and even the natural world, the rivers, the rocks, the beaches. And I've nailed it down to about how you answer four basic questions will reveal what a person's worldview is. The first one is, are humans viewed as part of nature or separate from it? The second is, do non-human species, the other critters that we share the planet with, do they have value beyond their, have intrinsic value, value beyond their usefulness to us? And do we have any responsibility as humans to future generations of humans? And ultimately, are we accountable to anybody or anything? Whether it's a higher spirit, a higher being, ancestors, powers, an entity beyond humanity. How you answer each of those questions will reveal a great deal about your worldview when it comes to nature. Science is really quite helpful in answering the first one, are we part of nature or separate from it? But the other three are really beyond the realms of science to answer. It can't help at all in giving you an answer to those kinds of questions. And this is because of the way science works and what science does. Science, and I've been doing it for a while, is about discovering how the world is. But it's meant to be agnostic about how it should be. It doesn't really have the tools in its toolkit to work out what should be. To get those kinds of answers to those kinds of questions, you have to go outside science. They're really important questions, but they're not scientific questions. And Einstein realised this very early on in the 1930s. And he said, "I do not believe that a moral philosophy can ever be founded on a scientific basis. Every attempt to reduce ethics to scientific formulas must fail." What Einstein's saying there is you need to look somewhere else other than science. It's pretty good at working out how things are, but it's useless at working out how things should be. You'll need to go and get your values from somewhere else other than science. In fact, it's meant to be value-free. So for me, fairly obviously, the place I've gone to look for my values is my Christian faith. And I'm going to run through some, what I hope are pretty obvious, uncontroversial statements about, from my faith, that address those four big questions about my worldview. So in my understanding, the Bible teaches we are part of nature. We're made of the same stuff as the rest of creation, the dust. And we actually used to have that in our funeral services, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. We would affirm that is the stuff of which we are made. So as high and mighty as we may regard ourselves and our special relationship with God, when it comes down to it, we are just made of the same stuff as the rest of the universe. And what we've run into trouble is when we've done great harm is when we lose sight of that mystery and lose our humility. And that humility was there beautifully in the Psalms. Psalm 8, "When I look at the heavens, the work of your hands, the moon and the stars which you have established, what's man that you're even mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him?" It's when we lose that wonder and take on an attitude of arrogance towards nature, I think, that we've run into all sorts of troubles. The second really important point to me that we lose track of is that the earth belongs to God, not to us. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and those who dwell therein. The other psalms, the cattle on a thousand hills, we've sung, I'm sure, at times, hymns that remind us of that. And in the law, in Leviticus, "The land shall not be sold in perpetuity, for the land is mine, Yahweh's. For you are strangers and sojourners with me." It's not that God has abandoned the land. God is with us in this land. So that to me is really important. And we've gone well and truly off the tracks when we've behaved like the wicked tenants in Jesus. I don't remember the parable Jesus told in Matthew, and said that the tenants wanted to take over the vineyard and they'll knock off the heir to the vineyard when he turns up, because they actually wanted to run the show themselves. And that's worked terribly badly for us. Terribly badly, when we've behaved as if the Lord has left the garden and we're in charge now and it's all going to go our way. What a contrast to how God intended for us. In Genesis, we read in the older story, the second story of creation, at the end of it in chapter 2, of God setting humans a particular crucial role to look after the garden, to till it and to keep it. We've tended a bit more to focus on the other creation story, and particularly the verse I've got up there from chapter 1 of Genesis, where we've hung on to the fruitful and we've enjoyed doing that bit, though we've overachieved a tad in the fruitful and multiply bit, but the subdue bit and have dominion bit is the bit we've clung to. And the disturbing part for me is we've taken that dominion as if we're behaving instead of God, as opposed to being on behalf of God in that dominion, a shared custodianship. You might remember in that first chapter of Genesis where God gives the commandment to the fish and to the birds of the air to multiply and fill the earth. And then we get this verse later on for us to come. The earlier bit wasn't disqualified by this latter bit. God still wanted the birds and the fish to multiply and fill the earth. Our dominion was not meant to wipe them out. Our dominion was in the constant was in the context that that's what God wanted in the first place, for them to be fruitful and multiply as well as us. And yet we've drifted into this dominion position where we seem to say we will work out what's good, and that's done tremendous harm. We've behaved as if we owned the garden. And we haven't reflected the characteristics of the owner, which were gracious, generous, just. We've been stingy, disrespectful, and wantonly wasting things. That's my observation of a lot of scripture. That's what we did. I like to joke, if we ever do find another planet to live on, we're never going to get the bond back on this one. And God cares about the rest of creation, even if we didn't. Scriptures are full of statements like we heard from Psalm 104, that it's God who provides for these creatures with every green plant to feed on. The animals all look to you to give them their food in due season. When you give them to them, they gather it up. When you open hand, they are filled with good things. It's a picture of God caring for creation, caring for the creatures, not ambivalent about them as though they're minor players in a bigger theatre. Even the land, even the soil, the laws of Leviticus that were laid down said the land needed to be rested, to be given a Sabbath as well. Rest for the land, rest for the beasts that are in your land. We have quite an exploitative view at times, even amongst the Christian community, of it's there, God, a God-given gift for us to utilise, and it would be wasteful not to do it, use it. My fifth point is the very fundamental teaching of Jesus, to love your neighbour as yourself, and to think ecologically, who is my neighbour? Just about anything I do was going to have an effect on somewhere else on the planet, particularly in this age of climate change. And we see the refugees constantly in our news now, environmental refugees, who are no longer being able to sustain themselves in places they used to be able to. And the very basic last point is that we shouldn't steal. The Ten Commandments are a fairly basic list of guidance for the followers of Jesus. And when we deprive our future generations of seeing the things we got to see, to me that's intergenerational theft. That's carelessness, and it's something we need to confess. So I don't think any of these aspects are hopefully too controversial, that we're part of nature, we don't own the joint, we're custodians, and that God actually cares about them, that we should love our neighbour and we shouldn't steal. I think they're uncontroversial. I've been listening a bit to N.T. Wright of late, and he's been keen to highlight how sometimes our very view of the gospel as Christians, particularly amongst evangelicals, of which I regard myself as one, where that too can distort our view of what we think about nature, as if God is only interested in the spiritual aspects of life and not the physical or material. That's certainly not the impression you get of Jesus, of caring for both the physical and the spiritual needs of people. In fact, some people present the gospel as though it's an escape from earth. Quite a contrast to the part of the Lord's Prayer we just said. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. On earth. So rather than seeing nature as an expendable backdrop to the wonderful story of salvation, it's an intricate part of the whole setup in the beginning that God cares about. There's even some of my evangelical brothers in the US, and there was a survey done, fully 10% of Americans in this survey thought it was a waste of time caring for creation because it's going to be a new earth and a new heaven anyway, so you don't need to do anything, really. In fact, you might be working against God if you tried to preserve it. I think they need to read Thessalonians, where Paul struck a similar bunch of people who were sitting on their hands waiting for Jesus' second coming, not doing anything. And Paul admonished them, get up off your behinds and get engaged. So the prophet Joel spoke to a people who are also wrestling with environmental challenges of drought, of locusts and of bushfires, and called them to repent and to come back. And I think we're in a similar spot now. The prophet Joel also reminded us that God doesn't leave us to our devastation. If we're faithful and repent and return, God is faithful and just and blesses us, not leaving us in our mess, and it will give full yield. To me, when I do what the wonder of fire ecology, which gets me to, I'll get distracted in a minute, but just the capacity of nature to come back, even when we do atrocious things to it, is captured in that picture of a eucalypt coming back after fire. And we can do great things if we put our mind to it. We are doing great things. Here's a couple of slides from southwestern Victoria that my friend Andrew Bennett's worked a lot in, restoring landscapes. I've been involved in this little eastern bristlebird's return to Wilson's Promontory National Park. We're restoring things. It's possible. We can do it. On big scales, this chap, Tony Renato, has had an extraordinary impact in Niger, where he encouraged local farming communities in the midst of drought over here in the 1984 famine. He convinced farmers to fence off and protect these little stumps that were still in the paddocks from their goats and from their cattle, and transformed the landscape. The farmers transformed their landscape to such an extent it could be seen from space. Millions of hectares restored by changing grazing practices and protecting the vegetation to come back again. An extraordinary achievement that's resulted in increased productivity, less famine, because a Christian faithfully and prayerfully sought help from God, and he believes it's been very much a work of God in that place. So what are we to do on this Father's Day, on this Grandfather's Day? When we get a question like this, so Poppy, what are you and Nanny actually doing to make a difference for creation care? So I thought I'd make a list. And the top of that list is a probably surprising one, but it's general agreement amongst the conservation community. The most significant and world-changing thing you can do for conservation personally is to support the education of women and girls in developing countries. That's the most impactful thing you can do on the planet, to give them options and have more control over their reproductive lives, to give them the skills they need to make a difference in this world alongside the males in the population. So that's the top of my long list. Support greater investment globally in the education of women and girls. Think about how we use the gifts we've been given to be frugal, not wasteful. Eat a more locally sourced diet. Transition away from fossil fuels in the way we get around. Think about how much air travel we do and whether we pay for offsets. Minimise our home energy use. Turn off the flipping lights. I'm still working. My children are 32 and 36. Getting them to turn off a light. Give me strength. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Think about where we invest our money. Does it match with the values of God? Think about where we might put our hands on efforts, whether we'd get involved in lobbying governments to behave justly in regard to nature, stopping habitat loss, controlling emissions, basic things like weeds and pests, repairing some of the damage we've done. It's possible. We know how to do this stuff. We really do know how to do this. It's not technologically challenging. It's all about will and values. And in that area, I think the last point is really important. There's a sense of growing despair and, it's almost like paralysis. I've had the privilege of being involved in helping people do things, and that's good for the spirit, and I think we are part of a group that should be encouraging and hopeful. So, to conclude, like the prodigal son, who you remember did a lot of trashing of his inheritance, I think we need to stop, take a deep breath, own up to our mistakes, not paper over them, seek forgiveness, and return to the Father's embrace. We're not doing this on our own. This is with the Spirit, with the guidance, and with the power of the love of God, who Joel reminds us is faithful and just and loving and beside us. So, in conclusion, I don't think caring for creation is optional. I think it's at the heart of our very calling as human beings, and it's been that way from the beginning. Thanks very much.